When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, I'm Candace Lim, and you're listening to ICYMI. In case you missed it, Slate's podcast about internet culture. And for everyone who was sad about Charles Melton not getting a SAG nomination, let me tell you, I see you, I stand with you, and I am one of you, because I am Charles Melton Hive. I was there at Riverdale, and I do not feel fear, but instead motivation to continue the campaign for Charles to get an Oscar nomination for his role in May, December. And so I will be registering the Club Melton handle, and we will be sending out t-shirts to members as soon as possible. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I want to give a quick warning that this episode does include discussion of murder and sexual assault. So today, we are talking about someone who has kind of been the internet's main character for several weeks. I am, of course, talking about Gypsy Rose Blanchard. On December 28th, 2023, Gypsy Rose Blanchard was released from prison after serving 8 years for the brutal murder of her mother, Dee Dee. And when Gypsy Rose is released, the internet loves her. They make memes. They crown her mother. They follow her on TikTok and Instagram. They write very supportive comments. And they talk about her like she is America's sweetheart. But when I think about Gypsy Rose's internet presence, I can't help but think about this episode we did in October, where we talked about John Romano, a TikTok content creator who was also a former school shooter. When Romano was 16, he walked into his high school with a shotgun in an attempt, he says, to commit law enforcement assisted suicide. No one was killed, but a teacher was shot and injured, and Romano served 17 years in prison before being released in 2020. Since then, Romano has been posting TikToks that range from the effects of seasonal affective disorder to gun control, because he's spoken several times about how sorry he is for what he did and how he is actively trying to prevent the next school shooting. And despite his earnest pleas for forgiveness, a lot of TikTok commenters were unhappy about his content and very unwilling to let Romano be a citizen on TikTok, to the point where he had to private his account and turn off his comments for a time. So I think about Romano, and I can't help but ask, why is Gypsy Rose allowed to become an influencer with open arms, but Romano is not? What makes the internet stan her, but act almost punitive in the way they treat Romano and want to run him off TikTok? And does supporting Gypsy Rose mean letting her off for murder, or is the internet just giving her a second chance at normalcy? I have a lot of questions. So on today's show, I'm talking to Vox culture reporter Asia Romano, who wrote about Gypsy Rose back in 2017 and has a lot of thoughts about her social media presence since. We'll get into all of that with Asia after a short break. Hey there. If you love our podcast, then maybe you should consider subscribing to Slate Plus. With Slate Plus, there are no ads on any Slate podcasts. And Slate Plus helps keep this podcast going, because this show would not be possible without your support. With Slate Plus, you'll get bonus segments and episodes for shows like Dear Prudence, Amicus, and Culture Gab Fest. You'll also never hit a paywall on the Slate website, meaning you get access to every article and every advice column. Just visit slate.com/ICYMI+ to sign up. That's slate.com/ICYMI+. Sibling fights are unavoidable, but what if every fight you had was under a microscope on a global scale? That's the reality for brothers Prince William and Prince Harry. They were each other's closest friends and allies since the death of their mother, but that all began to crack as they married and took wildly different approaches to their royal duties. Wondery's podcast, Dis and Tell, is hosted by comedians Sydney Battle and Matt Bellassai. Each episode unpacks one of pop culture's most iconic celebrity feuds, and they recently took a deeper look into the real reason William versus Harry started. It's actually much bigger than these two brothers, stretching back into the history of the British monarchy. Did their feud start with the royal family's mistreatment of Meghan Markle, or was it something that started much earlier? Follow Dis and Tell on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. And we're back. Joining me on today's show is Vox culture reporter Asia Romano. Hello, Asia.
Hi. Nice to be here.
So great to have you. Now, this is your first time on ICYMI, and so there is a question I must ask you, which is, what is your first internet memory?
Oh, gosh, my first internet memory. I probably came to the internet earlier than most people because I am a kid of the 90s and I went to Governor's School in Tennessee, which is this basically like summer school for high school kids. And while I was there, we were using like very early, like primitive internet. We were using like Telnet and so forth. And so I think my very first memory of the internet is just associated with the freedom that came from being in this program for gifted high school students, because I'd never had anything like that happen to me before. So it was all part of this wondrous new journey that I was on that had innately nothing to do with the internet, but also everything to do with the internet.
Yeah, I loved that. And I think you are a perfect person to talk about the internet and what the internet can do to some people if they have the access, because we are here today thanks to the date December 28th, 2023. And that is the date that one Gypsy Rose Blanchard was released from prison.
After 8 years behind bars, and before that, a life confined to a wheelchair, Gypsy Rose Blanchard will soon walk free. Now 32 years old, she's set to be released early from Chillicothe Correctional Facility in Missouri tomorrow, where she served a shortened sentence for the second-degree murder of her mother, Dee Dee.
Gypsy Rose was sentenced to 10 years back in 2016 after pleading guilty to second-degree murder, but in September, she was granted parole and served 85% of her sentence before being released. Now, back in 2017, a Gypsy Rose documentary was released, and you, Asia, wrote a piece for Vox about it called HBO's Mommy Dead and Dearest is a Perfect Storm of True Crime, Pageantry, and Southern Gothic Tropes. And it's a great piece summarizing what goes down in the documentary, but also a great analysis of what exactly we are supposed to take away from it. So I want to start at the beginning. How would you describe the story of Gypsy Rose Blanchard to someone who has not seen the documentary, heard about her, gone through the Wikipedia page?
I would describe it as kind of a bizarre, garish, almost larger than life battle of wills between a mother and daughter, where you have this mother that is controlling and narcissistic and has projected all of her need for attention onto her daughter via what we now know of a disorder called Munchausen by proxy. Most of the public actually learned about this disorder through this case. And Munchausen syndrome is a syndrome whereby someone pretends to be sick for attention. Munchausen's by proxy is where someone forces someone else in their life to be sick so that they can then have attention for caring for that person. And in this case, the person that the mother, Dee Dee Blanchard, was practicing her abuse on was her daughter, Gypsy Rose Blanchard. And Dee Dee Blanchard would force her to use a wheelchair. She shaved her head to make it look like she had been having chemotherapy. She forced her to use a feeding tube. She convinced multiple doctors to give Gypsy multiple unnecessary surgeries, including really horrible things. Like at one point she had her, I think, saliva glands removed. Just really bizarre, awful stuff. And she also created this entire illusion and this narrative around Gypsy that was sort of smoke and mirrors. You know, she was perpetually young. She's perpetually ill. She was sick with everything. She had chronic illness. She was on death's door. They were low-key celebrities, you know, in the terminal illness community, I guess you could say. You know, they received lots of attention. They received lots of gifts. You know, they got to go on free trips. They received free housing, for example, from the Ronald McDonald House. This was both a disorder and also a scam. So Gypsy wasn't really able to escape. She was never allowed to be on her own. She was never allowed to talk to her doctors on her own. And she was also constantly encouraged and pressured to be performatively much younger than she actually was. Mm-hmm. So by the time things really kick off here, she was in her early 20s, was still essentially performing the role of being a young teenager. But she also was very, very eager to be on the internet, where she met a guy named Nicolas Gottejean. Nicolas Gottejean was kind of vulnerable in his own way. He had a long history of mental illness. He was on the autism spectrum. He may have had dissociative identity disorder. The experts sort of argued over this in court. And he was very, very heavily into dark, dark fantasies and dark fantasy role-playing, that type of stuff. She kind of found him, and it was sort of this perfect storm of personalities coming together to fuel what happened next, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And can you maybe tell us what happened in 2015 that led to Gypsy Rose's arrest?
Dee Dee and Gypsy had a joint Facebook account. And in June 2015, out of nowhere, somebody made a post to their joint account that just said, "That bitch is dead." And the post is actually still up. And if you look at it, it's flooded with people, with their friends and neighbors just being so shocked and thinking this has to be a hoax, because their reputation in their community was just that they were a deeply united, loving mother and daughter pair. Dee Dee was seen as a saint. Gypsy was seen as just this pure, sweet child. And so nobody really knew what to make of this post. But when the police arrived, they found that Gypsy was nowhere to be found. But her mother, Dee Dee, had been brutally murdered. So they didn't know at first if Gypsy had been kidnapped or what was happening. But they quickly learned from looking at her internet history that it was likely that she and Nicolas Gottejean had participated in this together. And they were later located a few states away. And they were captured, and they both confessed to having murdered her together. And Gypsy wound up pleading guilty to second-degree murder, which is partly why she got such a reduced sentence, but also because of the extraordinary circumstances of this case and the horrific abuse that she'd suffered for years. She had felt like this was her only way out. I mean, you can argue that she manipulated Nicolas Gottejean into this. It was something that they very much romanticized, this fantasy of him sort of being her knight in shining armor and coming to her rescue and helping her escape this torture chamber where she had been kept her whole life. As brutal and as dark as it all is, like, it's also on a level you can't help but feel sorry for both of them. And he actually received, because he was the one who carried out the murder, he received a life sentence without the possibility of parole, which she can argue about whether that's a fair sentence for him to receive such a harsh sentence when she got off so lightly. Because obviously, if not for her, he would probably never have done this. He would have no reason to kill Dee Dee Blanchard otherwise, if not for her. And so she, like you said, served about 80% of her sentence. She got out in December. And her fan base, obviously, because of the coverage, the national attention that this case got, people were highly anticipating her release. And so there were a lot of people who were just very celebratory in the day that she was finally released. And she emerged from prison into the waiting arms of the press, basically, and has been on this wide-ranging and widely publicized press tour ever since.
You know, going back to 2016, Gypsy, she is sentenced to 10 years in prison. And during her time in prison, the media and Hollywood cannot get enough of her story. They are creating shows, documentaries, just writing about her constantly. And I want to kind of point to the 2017 Vox piece you wrote. That is about the documentary HBO put out. It's called Mommy, Dead and Dearest. I first off want to ask, what did you think about the documentary? Was it like fair? Was it bias? Did it change the way you thought about Gypsy and her story?
I don't think it changed the way I thought about the story, but I think it having all the context that it added was really useful. It gave me a lot of quite a bit of context about her family. And what we now know, too, is that there was likely a long history of abuse within her family. There's a lot of generational trauma visited not just upon her, but also on Dee Dee. Her grandfather has been accused of sexually abusing them both. And his response is actually horrifying. So it's not something that would lead you to believe that those accusations are empty. To that extent, that seemed to be a little bit layered in this documentary. Like, there were hints that the whole family was dysfunctional. And I think you can see that in a number of ways. And having that come through, I think, was really helpful in terms of thinking about how, you know, where these problems originated and how this all visited upon Gypsy herself, right? The documentary was maybe a little more objective in terms of Gypsy herself, in terms of not necessarily letting her off for her role in the murder, which I think a lot of people now want to only see her as a victim and only see her as someone who was horrifically manipulated by her mother, which is also obviously very true, and we should never lose sight of that. But she, in turn, also manipulated Nicholas Godejean. When we talk about her, we have to be really kind of reflective. And I do think that the documentary, in my memory at least, it was a pretty objective look at Gypsy herself.
Yeah. And this documentary definitely allows her to kind of enter the public consciousness with at least a little bit more context. However, in 2019, Hulu, they come out with a show called The Act. It stars Joey King as Gypsy Rose. Patricia Arquette plays her mom. Patricia wins the Emmy for it. And I think back then, we were kind of still very slightly bringing up this conversation about the ethics of fictionalized or dramatized true crime. Because even though the show was critically acclaimed, it won Emmys, you know, Gypsy Rose herself was not that happy about it. And I kind of want to talk about this moment in time when Gypsy Rose, she is in prison, but her story is kind of everywhere. Do you have any theories as to why the media in Hollywood was obsessed with Gypsy Rose herself? Like, was it warranted? Was it a little off-putting? How did you feel about it at the time?
I think it's still a little off-putting, honestly. You know, and I've covered a lot of these cases. You know, I've written about, for example, the backlash to the Jeffrey Dahmer miniseries.
Yeah.
I just wrote about May, December and the backlash that Vili Folau had towards that story being told sort of without his participation in any way. And I feel like this is a common trope that you hear among true crime, in the true crime community, that there's a need to not only be respectful of the victims when you're telling these stories, but to kind of take their viewpoints into consideration and as much as you can work that into your narrative, which is tricky. We sort of hold true crime to a different standard, perhaps, than we hold other types of fictional retellings of real life events. So there's that on a basic level. Also, in this case, Gypsy was convicted of murder. You know, she did have an active role in not only being the victim, but also perpetrating the crime. So when we talk about how should we incorporate her version of the narrative into the story, at some point we have to fundamentally be aware that that narrative to some degree is always going to be self-serving, because she maybe isn't even capable of being objective about her life or her own mother's. And I think that's another aspect to consider. Often victims and their families or survivors, they're incapable of being as objective as the subject deserves.
Exactly. And, you know, I want to kind of get into the 2020s at this point, because this is kind of where there's a bit of a lull, let's say, in the Gypsy Rose timeline. You know, she gets engaged to a guy named Ken. She gets married to her current husband, Ryan. And I don't think people were as interested in her story around this point. One, probably because there was this like entire new flood of true crime stories, podcasts, movies to obsess over. But also, I don't think she exactly had a voice yet, meaning I don't know if the public was ready to kind of hear from her just yet, except for to hear versions of her, i.e. through The Act. And so I don't think it was clear whether she'd get out early or if she'd complete her 10 years. But let's fast forward to September 2023, when it is announced that Gypsy Rose has been granted parole, which means that she is being released about 3 years early. And this is when the internet starts to kick up some leaves, because am I right in this? People were like excited for her. I mean, I found out about this because Pop Crave tweeted about it, and I was scrolling through some of the replies today. And if I may, I'm going to read some of them to you. Someone wrote, quote, Gypsy leaving prison now that she's an icon. I'm so happy for her. Slay as she should. She didn't deserve to be sentenced, in my opinion. Fight me. And I will be honest, I read these and I was like, whoa, I just did not realize that there were so many Gypsy Rose supporters, let alone online. And so I want to ask you, how did you feel about the internet's reaction to her when she was granted parole?
I was reading the tweets over the holiday and I almost messaged my editor, even though it was the holiday and we were all off, to be like, these tweets are awesome because they were so funny. They were just really delightful. It was just a really delightful kind of public outpouring. And we don't really get that kind of, especially on Twitter, which is, this was the rare occasion that I felt like Twitter actually justified its use as a platform, because people were just so happy and everyone, it was just so funny and kind of delightful to watch. I mean, a public celebration like that, that something that unites us, is always worth noting. And there was just a lot of really positive energy coming out of the whole trend and people just talking about her. And because as things go, it was pretty harmless. It's this abuse victim who's getting out of prison and she seems to be mostly okay, which is a cause for celebration. But at the same time, she's a convicted murderess. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. So,
yeah, I want to talk about that a little bit because, hey, I agree with you. Did I giggle, smash the like button on some of these tweets? Sure thing. I did have to kind of take a step back and ask myself if I maybe should feel a little guiltier about the joy that's kind of emanating from Twitter because of this. Because like you said, she did serve time for her involvement in the murder of her mother. And so should we be celebrating her so openly online?
It's really tough because, again, like I said, I still feel really sorry for Nicholas Gotajan. He's serving life in prison without parole. Like, he's right. Never getting out. And his life is over because of this. Where is that level of empathy? Where is that level of public support for him? Is there that level, that same level of public support? Are we, to some extent, like, seeing her as someone who girl bossed her way out of abuse? Like, there's this idea of her as a survivor, but also something about her persona and the way we've come to identify her, see her, is as this sort of sassy poster child for true crime celebrity almost.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think people are really taking into account the actual, like, many layers of the psychological trauma she experienced and the trauma she's still working through. She absolutely was horrifically abused, and most people can't even fathom the level of abuse that she had to go through. I mean, being forced to use a feeding tube, being forced to have unnecessary surgeries on your body, like, it's so awful. But I think in this case, we're kind of overcompensating by taking her immediately from traumatized abuse victim to girl power, like, influencer, like, and it, with not a lot of real stop gaps in between. And of course, we don't know what her progress in prison was like. Prison isn't super well known for its rehabilitative therapy, but in this case, obviously, she had so much more freedom in prison than she had being at home. And it's obvious the road to recovery that she's been on. And it's obvious that she has done a lot of work to become healthy and normal. And it's hard not to just be very, like, simply happy for her. This specific story is so complicated. So it's hard not to feel like we should be approaching with caution.
Yeah, this is a very complicated situation. So let's take a short break. But when we come back, Asia and I will break down the highs and lows of the Gypsy Rose press tour. This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo, get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, I'm journalist Sam Sanders.
I'm poet Saeed Jones.
And I'm producer Zach Stafford. And we are the hosts of a podcast called Vibe Check.
On Vibe Check, we talk about everything. News, culture, and entertainment, and how it all feels.
That's right. We talk about any and everything on our show, from real life issues like grief to music and movie critiques. And that barely scratches the surface.
Yes, indeed. And it doesn't stop there. We have got a lot to say. So join our group chat, come to life. Follow and listen to Vibe Check wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. So I want to go to December 28th. When Gypsy Rose is released from prison in the early morning. Her husband, Ryan, picks her up, takes her to a house where her family and friends are waiting to greet her. And so begins the Gypsy Rose press tour, Asia. Do you have any moments that you would like to highlight between her release and, like, yesterday, perhaps?
Yeah, I think her appearance on The View is a big one.
Let's see what I can do with it. Yeah. I'm going to try to create some change and, you know, be a voice for the voiceless. You know, if there is someone out there watching right now, please listen to me. Heed my words that you are not alone in this, you know, situation. There are other ways out. I did it the wrong way.
Don't say that.
I did something wrong, and I paid my dues for it.
Oh, you mean that part?
Yes, the part of it, yeah. You know, that part of it.
It takes Joy a moment to remember that Gypsy murdered somebody. And then she's like, oh, well, apart from that, like, and it's like, apart from that? Like, what other thing was there apart from that? Like, that's why we're here.
For me, it is the way that Gypsy Rose then has to say to Joy Behar, murder is wrong. She has to say that to her to, like, remind her. Let me back up and say that the reason why Gypsy Rose Blanchard has been on probably every outlet, screen, refrigerator you've seen this January is because she's promoting a Lifetime docuseries and an ebook. But in your recent Vox piece, you brought up this very interesting comparison between Gypsy Rose and Britney Spears in the way that they've kind of, like, created this narrative arc as victims who were able to use books and documentaries to emerge as survivors. But despite all of that, I do wonder, should we be, like, at all cautious about Gypsy Rose and her motives on this press tour?
It's tough, right? Because on the one hand, you know, she's got to make some money. She's got to build a life for herself. But on the other hand, there's some trepidation around the choices that she's making now, right? Because, you know, if you depend too heavily on, you know, your 15 minutes of fame, then you have to figure out who you are when that 15 minutes of fame is over. Part of the unease around this is that we're seeing her do all these shows, et cetera, right? But like you said earlier, we haven't really seen much of her since she was in prison. We can trust just from the way that she's acting now and the way she's presenting herself that she's done a lot of work and she's gone through a lot of recovery. But in terms of all of that trauma that she's had to deal with, like, we still don't know that she knows who she is. And it's something of a warped Cinderella story. And people do love a Cinderella story, right? And I think maybe, and this is also why I drew the comparison to Britney Spears. You know, people are, they're obsessed with her story and they're obsessed with her narrative, but they're also, they need to keep eyes on her to see that she continues to validate that narrative, right? You know, to see how she continues to grow and evolve. Because people are basically rooting for her at this point. You know, they're both grown women who are coming into their own without really knowing who they are. And they've had to kind of figure out their identities, their, like, who they really are as adults, like, under the scrutiny of the public. And with Gypsy, because there's so much psychological trauma there, we as the public have no way of knowing how much she has or hasn't dealt with that and how much support she has or doesn't have to really help her deal in the long term with everything that she's been through, now that she's out in the real world, these press tours, the documentaries, none of that is reality either. You know, like if you think about her life, like she still has yet to enter the real world. The question of who she's going to be at that point isn't something that the cameras can answer. It isn't something that any of the public can answer. And it's something that is deeply personal. And I'm not sure that it's something that we want to be there to watch, you know, because it's something she's going to have to figure out for herself on her own. And the longer we keep the cameras on her, it feels like the longer we delay that process, and maybe the more we set her up to fail when it finally comes to an end.
There is something so interesting about watching Gypsy Rose Blanchard, who I think I can admit is like charming. There is something about the way she talks and really gravitates people to her that is absolutely working in her favor. But what I really want to talk about is Gypsy Rose and girlhood, because Gypsy Rose was sentenced when she was 24. She was released in her 30s. And so there's a lot of stuff she missed. For example, just like social media. She probably didn't have an Instagram in prison. But I also think about the little things, such as her mother forced her to shave her head. And now when we see her, she has a full head of hair. That is a small moment of reclamation. On top of that, this idea that, like, if it is true that her mother has been abusing her since she was as early as 3 months old, this is the freest she's ever been at the age of early 30s. And that is like a very interesting time to enter womanhood, let alone reclaiming girlhood. And so I wanted to ask you, do you think there is something here about the way that Gypsy Rose is reclaiming her girlhood, especially in the year of Barbie and trad wives and girl dinners, you know, like finding traction online?
Yeah, I definitely think that's a bit part of it. I think because we're seeing her experience all of this stuff for the first time is still sort of new and novel when she talks about it. And I think that she's aware of that. And I think she plays up that in a way that is very smart. But also I think it's very natural, you know, and that tweet where the person was like, I want to have a joint. I want to share a joint with Gypsy Rose. Like, it reminded me of that scene in May, December, where Charles Melton's character is watching his son smoke a joint for the first time, and he's never done it. And his son is like, are you serious? You know, and he has that moment of realizing what he lost because he was in this coercive relationship where he didn't have a childhood because adulthood was forced on him because of what happened to him. And you can see this painful realization on his face, and he almost has a breakdown over this act of, you know, having a joint for the first time. And I think some of that is being distilled into our projection of Gypsy, you know, we're watching her go through these things that we know she's never really had much chance to experience before. And I think when it comes to all of the tropes of femininity, we're sort of amplifying and magnifying them in the way that we react to her. You know, people are always talking about how gorgeous she is now. And it's a manifestation of this cultural need we have to see her kind of ascend, you know, and become the most embodied personification of femininity that you can have in a culture where we're also reckoning with what has been done to her, right? Like, because I think for a bunch of reasons right now, you have the Barbie movie, but you also have, like, we're in the era of Ozempic, right? We're in the era of fascist body policing. You know, we're in the era of regressive gender policing and regressive gender politics overall. Like, we're in, like you said, the trad wives, like, we're in this era where femininity needs to be as hardcore feminine as it can be in order to be successful. And I think she represents that to a lot of people because she is sort of nascent, because she's just sort of emerged from this long cocoon of, I don't know, not knowing who she is. She has this chance to kind of completely remold her identity in front of us. And I think there's a lot of public pressure and cultural pressure on her to make that identity the most emblematic of this moment that we're in, you know, to make it as feminine, as girly, as successfully womanish, you know, as it can be.
So after Gypsy Rose was released from prison, you wrote this great piece for Vox called Gypsy Rose Blanchard, whose bizarre tale of abuse ended in her mother's murder, is the latest free woman at the eye of a media hurricane. And something you kind of brought up pretty early is the way that we treat and talk about prisoners who have been released. Just what is their life post that? I can't help but ask this question, which is, why is Gypsy Rose being allowed to return to society, and specifically social media, with such open arms when a lot of people who exit the carceral system aren't? And like, what makes the internet stand Gypsy Rose but almost act punitive in the way they treat anyone else who is like trying to live a normal life and embed in society via social media?
It's so complicated. I think because we only have one side of the narrative, I think that's a huge part of it. And that side seems to so blatantly support Gypsy and her identity as a victim. I don't want to throw around the word victim. If you overuse that word, it loses its meaning. And I think most people would prefer, like, I'm sure she would prefer to be thought of as a survivor, like you said, like she's kind of pivoted the narrative. But I think the initial shock people feel when they learn about the story and they learn how horrific the abuse of her was, I think their immediate reaction is just overwhelmingly one of sympathy, you know, which is absolutely understandable. And there, so far, there's been nothing to shift that. If her mother was here and if we could hear what her mother has to say, undoubtedly there would immediately be people who would be like, okay, no, I'm team mother, I'm team Dee Dee. Right. And like, you know, they would make sort of countering the dominant current narrative, they would make countering that their mission, right? I think partly that's just human nature. And I think partly that's because people who go through the prison system, like, we don't really have the means set up for them to reintegrate into society on their own terms, the way that Gypsy has been able to negotiate the terms of her reintegration. Mm-hmm. Because, again, because I think the narrative, the media narrative that has been spun about her while she is in prison, the media narrative has largely upheld this view of her as a victim, right? There's been nothing to really counteract that or complicate that in any way. So she's just sort of, she exited prison into this, the waiting embrace of this narrative where she is a Cinderella story. But if you look at somebody like Amanda Knox, like, people still think that she did it, you know? People still think that even though she was exonerated, you know, even though she was by all accounts wrongfully convicted, there isn't the same level of sympathy for her. And part of the reason for that is that the competing narratives about what happened to her were always there. Like, they were always there and present throughout the entire history of her incarceration. So when she, like, when Amanda Knox was released, it's taken the public some time to really come around to her and the idea of her as a survivor of injustice. When she was first released, there were a lot of people who were very, very cynical about her, you know, and it kind of waiting for her to reveal what her true personality was and like who she really was. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's sort of typical of the way that a lot of people are greeted when they exit the prison system, because even if you were wrongfully convicted, I think on the public, sometimes there tends to be this idea that, oh, you must have done something to be in there. Or you wouldn't be in this situation, even if it was wrongful conviction. You know, we know those can sometimes be very bizarre and sometimes have absolutely nothing to do with the person who winds up wrongfully convicted. But the public will often feel that they did something to deserve it, and that there's this unease around letting them back into society. Because even if they were wrongfully convicted, you know, you don't know what tricks they learned while they were in prison. You know, you don't know how corrupted they became because they went through the system. And, you know, we could be asking those same questions about Gypsy, but I think there just is zero impetus to do that because the overwhelming media narrative around her is, I don't want to say blinding, but it's very much it's mono voice. I don't know what the word
and
is.
Singular. I think she's very singular in that way, too.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's really unusual for us to have this person who is so kind of influencer ready And again, I think maybe too, that's because she didn't know who she was, and who she became in prison was this very, you know, it's possible that she's been preparing for this for the last 5 years or whatever. You know, as soon as she started getting offers from Lifetime, maybe she spent some time in prison every day practicing her public speaking. You know, maybe she has been working on this. Like, maybe she's been really prepping for this to be her new life. And if she has, then well done. She's doing great, you know? And so maybe that's part of why we're seeing her be so successful right off the runway, you know?
Okay, that's the show. I want to thank Asia Romano for joining me on today's episode. You can find more of Asia's work on Vox, where she writes about Travis Kelce, horror movies like Thanksgiving and Five Nights at Freddy's, and the Long Island serial killer. We'll be back in your feed on Wednesday, so definitely subscribe. That way, you never miss an episode. Leave us a rating and a review on Apple or Spotify, and tell your friends about us. You can follow us on Twitter at @ICYMI_pod, and you can always drop us a note at ICYMI@slate.com. ICYMI is produced by Sierra Spragley-Ricks, Rachel Hampton, and me, Candace Lim. Daisy Rosario is our senior supervising producer, and Alicia Montgomery is Slate's vice president of audio. See you online or on The View.